Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
John Lennon, he of the Beatles, you may have heard of them. Sing about revolution.
You say you got a real solution. Well, you know, we don't love to see the plan. You ask me.
So, listen to this. This guy's name is Michael Reinl. He's the suspect in the Portland shooting where another guy was shot and killed last weekend. Okay, this guy Michael Reinl, the suspect, he was shot and killed as police attempted to apprehend him last night. It's from the Wall Street Journal. An Antifa supporter suspected in the death of a right-wing activist last weekend in Portland, Oregon, was killed as officers moved in to arrest him on Thursday evening, according to law enforcement officials. Members of a federal fugitive task force fatally shot Michael Reinl at 7:30 p.m. while attempting to take him into custody in Lacey, Washington, according to Lieutenant Ray Brady of the Thurston County Sheriff's Department. Four officers opened fire on Mr. Reinl outside of an apartment complex after he pulled a gun, according to Lieutenant Brady, said the U.S. Marshals Service. Mr. Reinl was pronounced dead at the scene. None of the officers involved were injured. Mr. Reinl, who voiced his support for the loosely organized left-wing group Antifa on social media, was wanted on an arrest warrant for murder obtained earlier Thursday by police in Portland. Portland police had been investigating him in the fatal shooting of Aaron J. Danielson last Saturday, according to his sister and law enforcement sources with knowledge in the matter. In an interview aired by Vice News late Thursday, Mr. Reinl appeared to be referring to that incident and said he was acting in self-defense. I had no choice. I mean, I had a choice. I could have sat there and watched them kill a friend of mine of color, but I wasn't going to do that. So he shot and killed somebody. It wasn't immediately clear why. He was in Lacey, which is a suburb of Olympia, which is up near south of Seattle, Tacoma, if I'm not mistaken. Olympia. Yeah. Olympia, Washington. I think that's where they used to brew Ham's beer. Olympia, Washington. The capital of the state of Washington is at the southern end of Puget Sound. There you go. Tumwater, exactly. Olympia. How do I remember this shit? I'll tell you why, because my grandmother used to drink Ham's beer. Yes, Margaret. Hams Breweries, Olympia, Washington. And here it is. From, I can almost sing, I could almost sing you, I could sing you the, I could sing you the song. It went something like this. From the land of sky blue waters. And there was like an Indian tom-tom in the background. Comes the Hams. There was a Hams beer commercial. My grandmother, they made Hams beer in 6-ounce cans. And so my grandmother would make us lunch. We'd have like, my grandmother's lunch specialty was tuna fish sandwiches and Fritos. This is hilarious. Tuna fish sandwiches, Fritos, and orange juice. And it tastes, it's a great meal. I still, you know, if I would think it, I'd make it today because it tastes good. But anyway, my grandmother's name was Margaret. She was one of the nicest people to ever walk this earth. She grew up going to boarding schools because her mother passed away when she was young. Her family was involved in mining in Alaska, my grandmother. Yeah. So she grew up in Alaska, and her family had money. And so they sent her away. Her stepmother sent her away, right? So her dad remarried, and her stepmother sent her away to live in a convent. But anyway, but being from, you know, living in Alaska and then Seattle, where she grew up mostly, I heard about the store called Nordstrom's when I was a kid. It wasn't anywhere outside of, I think, the state of Washington until they expanded nationally. But I heard about it. And you can look at pictures of my grandmother at weddings and stuff like that. And my grandmother is always dressed perfectly. From Nordstrom's, I might add. So anyway, but she drank Hams beer. So let me give you the history of Olympia Brewing Company. The Olympia Brewing Company was a brewery in the northwest United States located in Tumwater, Washington, near Olympia. Founded in 1896 by Leopold Frederick Schmidt. It was bought by G. Heilman Brewing Company in 1983. Through a series of consolidations, it was acquired by Pabst Brewing in 1999. The brewery was closed in 2003. Yep. For many years, Olympia beer was brewed with water obtained from artesian wells. Yeah. The company's promotion made much of the use of artesian water in the brewing process. However, the advertisement never explained what artesian water was, preferring to claim that the water was controlled by a mythical population of artisans. How funny. Anyway, so the story goes on. Mr. Reinhold's sister said Thursday. Now, this story gets more amazing as I go, okay? So it's stunning. And these are the people that are running amok in our cities. I think this guy's emblematic of them, okay? Mr. Reinhold's sister said Thursday night she wasn't surprised at hearing the news of his death. I knew people were after him, said his sister, who was estranged from him. Geez, I wonder why. I wish none of this had happened. Now, you'll find out the rest of the story here in a second. The Portland shooting took place following a night of clashes between protesters of police brutality and a caravan of trucks bearing signs and slogans supporting President Trump. Portland police didn't immediately return calls for comment Thursday night. The story goes on. Hold on, let me cut to the chase. An Instagram account in Mr. Rosenhall's name, Reinhall's name, I'm sorry, is filled with images from 3 months of protests that have rocked Oregon's largest city. The account also has messages that align with the Antifa movement, which law enforcement officials say has been behind the frequent looting and violence there. Now, see, this is written by professional news reporters. Okay, they're reporting facts to you. Even the language is restrained and accurate. Mr. Ryan Mr. Reinhold, 48, said in the Vice interview that he had been working as security at the protest. So he's Antifa security. Interesting. At a July 5th protest, the police say, which devolved into a riot, Mr. Reinhold was arrested on charges including possession of a loaded firearm and resisting arrest, according to court records and police. A spokesman for the district attorney's office in Multnomah County, which is Portland, which includes Portland, said that it hadn't decided whether to press charges and that the case remained under investigation. So you get caught with a loaded weapon and that's all right? At a riot with a loaded weapon and that's all right? We're not sure if we're going to press charges. Good God, man. Mr. Reinhold was arrested June 8th in Eastern Oregon for driving 111 miles an hour on Interstate 84 while under the influence of marijuana and illegally possessing a handgun. Okay, as I told you, it gets better. With his 11-year-old daughter in the car, according to state police, he was racing. Ready for it? He was racing his 17-year-old son. I told you. I mean, this shit's amazing. Like, how is this guy, not in jail someplace for pick one? Let's see. At a riot, participating in the riot with a loaded weapon. Nah, come on. What are we all uptight about shit like that? Let's just make something up that we could pin on him. How about driving his car like 110 miles an hour? High, with a handgun. Yeah, we went to him in jail for that. With his 11-year-old daughter in the car. Yeah, that's, come on. Reckless endangerment of a juvenile? Come on. I think we all just need to relax. We have better things to do. It's amazing. So this guy got shot by police last night. And you wonder who's down there doing this shit. Mr. Reinhold, who lived in Portland, didn't appear at his arraignment on those charges in July, according to court documents, which surprised everybody. You know what? And you know what? And now they're after the mayor of Portland. Absolutely fitting. Just like what happened in Seattle. Oh, it's not. This is Seattle. This is not somebody taking over part of our city. It's a street festival. Until they came to her neighborhood. And then it wasn't a street festival. What a bullshit. What a bullshit leader. Same thing in Portland, man. What a bullshit leader. And look what it's done. I mean, I saw a story about Portland businesses exiting downtown because their downtown has been destroyed. And they drive they drive that stuff. The business in your downtown that's the lifeblood of downtown. You fight to bring people downtown in most cities. And now we're going to gut it because this shit's been going on for years in Portland. Somebody sent me an email, I can't remember who sent me an email about that reporter. He's a conservative reporter. He's an Asian guy. He's gay. Not that that matters. And he got the shit beat out of him. I mean, somebody took a brick and, from 3 feet away, hurled it and hit him in the back of the head. And you're watching it, and it's like, you punks, man. Rolling around in their black hoods. Just a bunch of little doofuses. They need their asses kicked. As protesters arrived at their doorsteps, Democratic mayors in Portland, St. Louis abandoned their homes. It's in the Washington Post. As hundreds of protesters gathered Monday outside a condo building where the mayor lives in an upscale district of Portland, Oregon, some set off fireworks, sprayed graffiti, broke windows. After someone tossed a burning object inside, police pushed the crowd away and made 19 arrests. The next day, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler sent a letter to his neighbors letting them know he planned to move out of his $840,000 condo in response to a string of protests targeting the building, the Oregonian reported. Quote, I want to express my sincere apologies for the damage to our home and the fear that you are experiencing due to my position. He said, no, it's not because of your position, dumb shit. It's because you're a weak leader, man. He said the move would be best for me and everyone else's safety and peace. He's not the only elected official leaving his home in response to demonstrations that have increasingly targeted public officials where they live, including the Democratic mayors of Chicago, Seattle, Pittsburgh, and St. Louis. Add the mayor of L.A. to that, too. They surround his house on a regular basis. St. Louis Mayor Lyda Crewson has temporarily relocated from her Central West End home on Wednesday after her neighborhood landed in the national spotlight when two neighbors emerged in June to point weapons at protesters. In Chicago, Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Chicago, which is the nation's national disaster as a city, I mean, just like a murder festival going on there. Lori Lightfoot has assigned police to control access to her street to keep protesters away, citing threats she has received. Police locked down Lightfoot's block using a local ordinance, which bans even peaceful protests in residential neighborhoods. So, yeah. So the mayor of Portland, to me, it's like he's a clown. He's a clown. Now, next story. Making national news. Trump angrily denies report he called fallen soldiers losers and suckers. Now, I heard this story, what is it, September? I heard this story 9 months ago, for what it's worth, which happens to be the name of this song right here. For what it's worth. Vietnam protest song. That's right. And it's about a curfew on the Sunset Strip. It's not about anything. It's not about anything that has to do with Vietnam or the 60s. This is about musicians watching a curfew. Saying, this is bullshit, man. How funny is that? That's right. That's why you listen to All Marine Radio. You get the truth behind the story. Because there was a 10 o'clock curfew and they wanted to stay out later.
From behind. Stop. What's that sound?
Anyway, so the story is that the president called fallen soldiers losers and suckers, okay, and alleges that it was raining, and he goes to the 100th commemoration of the armistice that ends World War I, and he goes to Paris, and in the morning event, he gets shit on by Angela Merkel and Francois Macron. The story says he's also considering firing John Kelly at the time. So he's in a foul mood. And discussion comes up about should he go to the afternoon event because it's pouring rain. Now, the president maintains that his staff and the Secret Service said, yeah, you can't go. Others say he didn't want to go. So you could decide who you believe. Now, the question is this going to sway anybody's vote? Now, people see the president as a hypocrite. He doesn't really respect the military, but he wraps himself in it all the time. So that's the gist of the story. And then the same thing about his relationship with John McCain. And the president rebuts that, as he does with everything. He says, whoever would say I said such a thing is vile. Right? What animal would say such a thing? Well, his critics say that he would. So I'm just saying that I personally heard this from somebody 9 months ago. The other thing is that, you know, was the way he treated John McCain. And, you know, the president famous for saying, like, not a hero. He got shot down. And he was like, he screwed it up. And then so he defended himself, saying all the treatment that John McCain got upon his death. He said, and look, I'll say this publicly. I did not care for him. He said, I signed every bit of that and did it without hesitation. So that in the news today. Nancy Pelosi's in the news. This thing's hilarious, right? And then she says she was entrapped into it. And then you had the woman who owns the salon. She's just a working woman, right? And then she goes on TV and lets it rip. Doesn't look too good for the Speaker of the House. But come on. It's not going to impact her. And again, why isn't she condemning the violence in American cities? Where is Chuck Schumer to say, you know, this is horrible. We need to stop this. You know, where is the chorus of leaders? And it's sickening because it's one of my, I can't even play the audio. Harry Reid says the war is lost. Says that in 2006 in an attempt to help whoever was running against George Bush. I don't even know who it was. Was it Al Gore again? I can't remember. No, 2004. So it'd been 2008. Harry Reid's running around saying this. The war is lost. I mean, he's aiding our enemies. Straight up aiding the enemies of the United States. Straight up. And so that's why this violence is not being condemned by Nancy Pelosi. If there were a Democratic president, she would be all over it, condemning it. We cannot have this in the streets. But it's all just a game. It's a big game of chicken for the White House. That's who leads our country. It's disgusting. Try to live up to your oath one of these days. Other big story is the unemployment rate. Excuse me. The unemployment rate fell to 8.4% in August as the nation continues its recovery at a, not so much of a V pace as a more of like a check mark, right? With the short end on to the left, right? So down quickly and then up kind of at a 45 degree angle. The jobless rate's decline, it was 15% in April, so it's a little more than half of that now as we start September. It was 3.5% in February when all this began. Part of the reason federal government hired people to do the census, I know because they keep knocking on my door. So that in the news there. And one of the things when you read about the jobless report, there's things looming, though. Several large companies have warned of major job cuts. United Airlines said Wednesday it plans to cut 16,370 staff amid a pandemic driven slump in passenger demand. Now, they initially furloughed people and did other things and under the premise that, well, this is not going to be long-lived. Well, that has not proved to be true. Coca-Cola, which I don't get, said last week it planned to lay off some employees and offer voluntary buyouts to about 4,000 employees in the U.S., including Puerto Rico, as well as in Canada. Economists say the new company layoffs reflect a shift in employers' mentality from earlier in the crisis when many expected shutdowns would be over in a matter of weeks. So that in the news. So those were, I just want to talk about those things real quick. It's Friday. Whitney Houston sings the national anthem, as she does every Friday. We'll check the news. And then in hour two, we're going to do all personality radio. That's right. Napa Man likes all personality radio. So we'll do today in history. I've got a few emails I want to wax eloquent on, and we'll spend the hour together. So good Friday to you. Whitney Houston makes it official, and good morning. Yeah, how about that? That's not bad. That's actually really good. The I'm excited to do Today in History. I don't do Today in History very often. And but I love history, and I love talking about it. And you're going to hear, so I'll do Today in History in hour two. And it's a little teaser. Ho Chi Minh's, it's the anniversary of his death, Ho Chi Minh. And you're going to hear Admiral Stockdale talking about that day, and he was in the Hanoi Hilton. Kind of interesting. And I'll play for you some him talking about being tortured and how he stopped it. And I mean, the story's an amazing story. He an amazing human being. So this is dedicated to cops around the country. I have another excited delirium story, and it comes out of Rochester, New York. I mean, it's a terrible video. But I have to tell you that I think I've learned a lesson about condemning police officers too fast. So, yeah, and I've got an email about that I'll talk about. So, yeah, this is dedicated to cops all over the country and law enforcement personnel who, in my opinion, are having to face every night life-threatening incidents because we don't have political leaders in this country that will do the right thing. And I think it's just sickening. I think the national catastrophe that is leadership in the United States is absolutely horrible. And people are getting killed because of it. And I think people like Nancy Pelosi, like Chuck Schumer, like Mitch McConnell, and I don't know, is it Kevin McCarthy? Whoever is in the minority. I mean, those people have to get their shit together and quit playing this partisan game when it comes to security and things that are life-threatening. Condemnation of that which infringes on people's right to assemble and people's right to free speech, and that's what these riots do, ought to be stopped. And as soon as something turns violent, everybody should say, yeah, that's not right. I thought we learned that in the 60s. Evidently not. And these shitheads, and I just read you the story about one. I mean, 111 miles an hour with his 11-year-old daughter when he's high with a loaded weapon. And that guy, what'd they do? Write him like, you know, 3 tickets? All right, be on your way. Hey, you know you're high. Slow it down, okay? Try to keep it under 90. What the fuck? So this is dedicated to police officers out there everywhere. God bless you and what you do.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech.
Yeah, it would.
But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. So, young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right. I want to play. Yeah, I want to play some. Let me do the weather and then I'll do that. Okay. Currently in Northern Virginia, in Quantico, the crossroads of the Marine Corps. It is sunny and 86 degrees. It's going to be warm there today. Down the coast at Camp Lejeune, it is sunny and 88. 29 Palms reports sunny and 88. Overcast and 67 at Camp Pendleton. Dark, cloudy and 73. At Camp Smith and Y, as the days get shorter here in September. In Okinawa, dark, cloudy, and 81. They have 3 weather warnings, so we'll have to check that out. They just dodged a typhoon. There's a storm surge advisory. All these advisories are in Japanese. Heavy rainfall advisory is in effect, and a high wave advisory in effect. So, got that going for you. in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it is 83 degrees. I don't think I'm going to give the weather in Helmand anymore. I don't know how many Marines are still there. I'll have to check with my sources. And then in Iraq, where Marines are dwindling by the day, it is clear, dark, and 105. Yeah! Currently at the home of All Marine Radio, the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, it is mostly sunny and 68.
Yep.
That's right. Now, let me just give you the weather here. It's supposed to go from, what are we supposed to be today? Junior Walker and the All-Stars, in case you don't know. 10-day forecast. All right, so looking for a high today of 82 degrees. So, I mean, a little bit warmer than it has been. I mean, this week has been beautiful. Okay? Absolutely beautiful. Mid-70s all week, which I love. Right? So 82 today, 95 tomorrow, 96 on Sunday. Yeah! Just turn the AC on now and just let it run. 86 on Monday, although my phone says different. Tuesday, 81. Wednesday, 90. Thursday, 89. Friday, 87. Now, here's what my phone says, which has my zip code. My phone says 79 today, 92 tomorrow, 91 on Sunday, 83. Vice 86 on Monday, 79. Wow, then we go back up to 90. Shit. So that's a look at your weather. Now, I want to play some audio from, this is the, coming up, this is the hotel, the salon owner who's been vilified by the Speaker of the House, who says she was entrapped. She was entrapped. Yeah, you can't make this shit up, man. The Speaker of the House entrapped. All right, so here's the woman that entrapped the Speaker of the House, I think.
Someone who breaks a rule to feed themselves or their children is very different from Mrs. Pelosi, who supports rules that even she acknowledges by her actions are not necessarily to ensure safety. I just wanted all stylists, including Jonathan, to be able to work in all salons, including mine, to be able to reopen safely for indoor services.
Meantime, protesters.
So now there's some struggling woman who Nancy Pelosi fires under the bus, right? I'm not going down, right? And if you missed yesterday's Lynch Kenny Costantini event, we all lived in Quantico when the mayor of Washington, D.C. was filmed in a sting. I think he was doing crack cocaine. And his line in the video was, bitch, set me up. And you see him, you see him doing this shit. And you're just like, it's amazing, right? Anyway, there's a they show the mayor. So we were all, and you hear him say this when he's confronted with doing, I think it's crack, and it might be with a prostitute. And his response when it all, when the shit hits the fan, was the same as Nancy Pelosi's. Bitch set me up. And so, Nancy Pelosi fires this woman under the bus. It says, I was set up. Right. The master strategist of the house was set up. Right? Amazing. Right. And you wonder why we have the leadership fiasco we have around this country. You know, and these poor Democratic mayors, right? You know, they want to make it greener, right? They want to do all these things, and now they got this law and order shit on their hands. And they're in so far over their head, it's a joke. It's a joke. The let me read you a couple emails and we'll take a break. Shithole weather. Oh, I gotta finish doing the weather, so hold on. Yeah, I almost left Bev's forecast out. All right. Good morning from Churchbridge, Mac. Hope you enjoy your Labor Day weekend. Sunny with a northwest wind of 15 for this afternoon. Current temperature is 50. Heading for a high of 66. So it's already cooled off in Canada, eh? No photo today, but I do have baseball-related questions if you care to respond. Do you bat left or right? I was a left-handed hitter. You spoke one day of being a little league catcher. Was that your position of choice? Did you also play other positions? Well, my dad was a catcher, so of course I wanted to be a catcher. Catchers run the game, right? They call the game. They call pitches and locations. And so, like, the catcher is the thinker on the team. Now, some teams, it's the fat kid. Okay, that's in the house I grew up, that's not the way we did it. The catcher, he calls the game. He tells the pitcher what to do. So that's the way I grew up. That's the perspective I grew up with. So that's the position I played into high school. And then I started playing. I was an infielder, too, so I caught, and I played third base, shortstop. So I did that. Yesterday you shared the lasting impression that Tom Seaver left with you. When you were around your father's teams, is there a catcher and or other position player whose combination of character and athletic ability you admired? No. Tom Seaver stands out that's who I grew up around. So I would get out of school and my mom would throw us in the car and then we would go to wherever my dad was, whether it was in the minor leagues or the major leagues. The minor leagues were more fun for me because there wasn't as much attention and all that kind of stuff. I had more freedom to do what little kids do, which is hang out and listen and play catch with people and go shag. Batting practice was, to me, the highlight of the day. And then everything after that was me having to do what I was supposed to do, right? Which was children should be seen and not heard. But I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And so but there was a noticeable difference when my dad got to Major League Baseball. Everything for some reason was more complicated. And it was, and so as I look back on it, guys who I really, really looked up to and respected, especially as I got older, I mean, I didn't look at them like a little boy looks at them anymore. I saw more of their life. So I saw the drinking. You know, I saw the way they ran around on the road. And I didn't care for it. I won't say the guy's name. You would know him. But we were someplace. Actually, we're in Los Angeles. And my dad was with the Cincinnati Reds. And in walks a player with this, you know, beautiful girl. And he's married. And I babysat his kids. And I got kind of quiet. And my dad asked me, like, what's going on? And I said, that makes me sick. He said, well, you know, you shouldn't judge people in their relationships. And I said, I know how proud I am of you when you leave our house, and to think that he repays that by doing this, I said, it's not something that I think is right. And so I got a chance to see them, right, as human beings, and that wasn't always a good thing. Dwight Evans, a guy in Boston, had a son with a form of that Elephant Man's disease. Not the same thing, but a variation of it. And he was different, I think, because of the way life had challenged he and his family and his wife. And he was somebody who always treated, at least in my opinion and my observations, always treated people with respect. There was a guy who I always admired for his toughness, and that was Don Baylor, played for my dad in both on the Angels and also in Boston. And he's just a hard, tough baseball player, and he was a great guy too. And but you know what I learned was, you know, it'd be like any group of human beings. Take 150 Marines, and you make them Major League Baseball players, and you throw all that money with them. You're going to have some that handle it well. You're going to have some that handle it horribly. And most of them are in the middle scuffling with it, you know, both the good and the bad. And the good ones, what I saw, came from good families. And Tom Seaver was emblematic of that. You could see why he was the way he was when you met his parents from Fresno, California. And you saw the way he acted as their son, you know, when he introduced my dad and I to his parents, and just the respect he showed for his parents. And you saw that, like, good parenting is good parenting. Good parenting produces good children. And good children grow up to be good human beings. They grow up to be good parents, and they pass those lessons along to their own children. And they understand the lessons. And so Tom Seaver, in my opinion, was in a very, very small class of just really outstanding guys. Now, so I think that's fair. Most of them scuffled with it. This notoriety, this fame, and so as I got older, I became more aware of it, and they ceased to be my idols. They ceased to be my idols. I saw them as very ordinary human beings. I saw some of them as pathetic human beings. And so anyway. But I would tell you, I mean, it was growing up as a little boy, it was absolutely, you know, wonderful. Go to the stadium with my dad. You know, I'd have a uniform that I put on. I'd grab my glove, and I'd go out and play catch. And, you know, they'd start batting practice. I'd go out. I had to go to the outfield. I couldn't be in the infield. That was my dad's rule. When I was a kid, stay out of the infield. And so the other thing that that I would tell you that was an interesting experience, I was he was with the Padres, and they came to San Francisco. And so I was sitting in the bullpen, which was my custom. So during the summer, I'd sit in the bullpen during the game. And because I didn't want to be near my dad. And so I'd go, and between innings, I'd warm up whoever was playing left field. That was my job. So I'd throw a ball to the center fielder so that they could play catch with the right fielder in San Diego, because the bullpen was down the left field line. And then I'd warm up the left fielder. And so it's that in San Francisco, when we lived in Sacramento, which is about 80 miles away, we go down to see the Padres, so I throw one of his uniforms on, and I go sit in the bullpen. And I have his jacket on, because it's cold in San Francisco, as I said yesterday. And he calls down the bullpen, and he says, "Hey, tell Mike to come down here. My antacid tablets are in his, I think they were called Gelucel. They're in my coat pocket. I need them." So I go running down to the dugout during the game, and which I was never in. And then I, you know, the inning starts before I can leave. And so I was going to wait between innings. So I just stood at the end of the dugout. And, you know, you watch a baseball game. Now imagine guys who do this every day of their lives. Imagine the intensity and what they see in a baseball game as opposed to, you know, normal people that just watch it. They see a completely different, they see it in slow motion, high definition, right? So you see, you hear guys talk about, you know, having a box, and when you see the pitcher's hand come through and you see nothing but baseball, you know it's a fastball. When you see part of his hand, you know it's a some kind of off-speed pitch. And you see, and I was like, I've never, I don't know that I ever saw that. But these guys do. That's how, I mean, that's how good their eyes are, their brain is. And they're, I mean, they're high, most of them are high school educated guys. Now, more of them are college educated now, but because that's a more acceptable path. But when I was growing up, guys were high school educated guys who went out and became baseball players. But the level of intensity and the level of knowledge, right, as they watch and the things you hear them say, I mean, was I so I stood at the end of the dugout and I watched and I was like, whoa, this place is intense. They watch every pitch. They watch the pitchers are sitting there and they're talking, the guys who aren't pitching, right? And they're watching the way the pitcher goes into his glove. And does he tip his pitches? And they look for it all the time as they sit there and talk about, you know, the way guys hit and the way guys hold their hands and the way this guy hits this pitch or whatnot. So it was, yeah, it was amazing. And it was there that I learned how to be, I think, a platoon commander. I learned how I watched my dad match up every night. My dad's, you know, players and what he had in the bullpen and all the matchups he tried to create. And I learned to be an infantry leader in the Marine Corps, watch my dad. And so, yeah, I signed an aviation contract to come in the Marine Corps. But what I knew how to do was be a leader of a group because I had grown up watching that. Tom Seaver, though, Tom Seaver was a different guy. I found yesterday, and I'd recommend, if you're a baseball fan listening to this, I would recommend that you check it out. But if you, I did a search on Tom Seaver pictures, and then if you put in Getty Images, Getty's has probably about 1,100 images of Tom Seaver throughout his career. And they're, you can imagine, they're Getty Images, so they're absolutely incredible. They're of his entire career. And he was a Madison Avenue, you know, guy. He good looking guy from Southern California. His wife was beautiful, Nancy Seaver, and she survives him today. And he was this version of Jack Armstrong. And he was as smart and as good of a human being as he was a baseball pitcher. And so Tom Seaver, you know, stands out among probably all the guys I was ever around not only a young guy, but then as an older guy. You know, like I said, I mean, I tell the story, and I'm not into assassinating Roger Clemens' character. But in 1986, I knew that guy was a liar. And you watch it play out in public. And then you see the things other people say. And you're just like, holy shit, man. And they know it's a lie, too. And so, hard lessons. But Getty Images, Tom Seaver, is just an incredible walk through his lifetime. And what an incredible guy he was. But he was very unique. And I will tell you this, seeing other guys, and I wish I could name more of them, but in fact, my dad's in a couple of the pictures in those Getty Images. Going to the mound when he was pitching for Cincinnati. Tom Seaver, unique guy in terms of good guy. And they always came from good families. You'd see their parents and you'd see, I see he comes from him and her. Here's another email. Olympia beer.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Felony child endangerment. Yeah. How do you do that stuff and not get arrested for that? How are you at a riot armed, right? Armed, you know, with a condition one weapon, and you're just out and about? I guess. So anyway, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, there's a bunch of news to get to that I haven't even talked about. And then we'll do all personality radio. So I want to talk about today in history. And then I've got a couple emails I want to get to that people have sent me this week. So don't touch that dial. More of this incredible program coming up next right here on your home for. Somebody sent me an email. Hey, Mac, I noticed that you have all new PSAs. Yeah, I do. And this one I think is really, 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 really good. It's called Side by Side.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Minutes after 9 o'clock here as we head into the news, and there's a bunch of it. I talk about some of it. So let me just read you some other headline. Stars and Stripes, 5 U.S. military facilities are among the locations selected for final coronavirus vaccine trials. What does that mean? So who are the guinea pigs? 5 U.S. military locations will participate in the final stage of clinical development for a potential coronavirus vaccine, and the government is looking for volunteers to participate. The military medical facilities chosen in Texas, California, and Washington, D.C. are among dozens of locations across the country selected to participate in Phase 3 testing of drug makers AstraZeneca's AZD-122. One of 4 vaccine candidates undergoing testing. Officials are asking military health system beneficiaries, service members, their families, and retirees near the selected facilities to volunteer for the study. They can also do so by completing a survey at coronaviruspreventionnetwork.org. That is coronaviruspreventionnetwork, all one word, .org, and entering a code corresponding to one of the 5 locations. Those facilities and their survey codes are, I'm not going to read you the codes, but these are the facilities: Naval Medical Center San Diego, Joint Base San Antonio Brooke Army Medical Center in Texas, Wilford Ambulatory Surgical Center in Texas, Walter Reed, and Fort Belvoir. So you got to be in San Diego, San Antonio, or Northern Virginia, D.C. area to participate. If you're not, sorry about that. You cannot participate. Next, NATO urges international response to horrific poisoning of prominent Russian dissident. So he got the same treatment as that guy in the U.K. got. So the Russians tried to poison him. This is from Jens Stoltenberg, right, the Secretary General of the United Nations. Time and again, we have seen opposition leaders and critics of the Russian regime attacked and their lives threatened. Some have even been killed. It is a serious breach of international law which demands an international response, he said in an emergency meeting in Brussels. Navalny, a prominent Russian opponent of President Vladimir Putin and a longtime anti-corruption activist who has exposed numerous cases of graft among Russia's elite, became sick on a flight to Moscow on August 20th. He then went to Germany. So the question is, and leads me to another story, like what is Angela Merkel, who is Russia's, right, who's Russia's chief apologist, what does she say in all this? So this is a Washington Post story. Germany's Merkel under pressure to cancel Russia pipeline project after Navalny poisoning. So Germany spent billions of dollars to tap into Russia relative to natural gas. German Chancellor Angela Merkel faced growing pressure Thursday to take a harder line with Moscow following the confirmation that Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny was poisoned with a nerve agent. Merkel said that she condemned the attempt to silence Navalny. What do you mean silence them? That's called killing them, you dumbass. She condemned it in the strongest possible terms. After a German military laboratory on Wednesday, one of the few functioning entities relative to the German military, right, confirmed the use of Novichok, a nerve agent, against his most prominent Russian critic. But even as Merkel demanded answers from Moscow, she also showed little signs of wavering in her support for a natural gas pipeline from Russia to Germany. So anyway, Russia's chief proponent on the continent runs Germany. She needs to go away. Germany needs to grow up. Sad. So that's in the news. The U.S. Army in Japan eases travel restrictions in time for Labor Day weekend. Congratulations to them. And in a move that will rankle some but is clearly appropriate, face masks with valves are now off limits for soldiers in South Korea. Why is that? The U.S. Army has banned masks with valves for soldiers and other personnel in South Korea, joining a growing consensus that high-tech face coverings may do more harm than good in preventing the coronavirus. The decision followed new guidance from the CDC, which said last month that such masks allow air to be exhaled through a hole in the material, which can result in expelled respiratory droplets that can reach others. Most of the time, those valves have filters on them, though, because your gas mask does the same thing. Anyway, so that is in the news. The Marine Corps says an outdoor barbecue triggered a massive firefighting foam leak in Okinawa. What? So much for sophisticated systems, right? An outdoor barbecue near the Marine Corps Air Station Futima triggered flight line triggered the release of 60,000 gallons of potentially toxic firefighting foam on April 10th. About 22,000 gallons of aqueous foam were contained on base. The remainder traveled off base through a storm drain into nearby streams and neighborhoods. Marines said their investigation found no threat to human health from either stormwater or soil levels, according to the statement. There were no drinking water sources impacted by the effect of the spill. Yeah, you know what? Why don't we have somebody, right, independently check that out? An official from the Okinawa Prefecture Environmental Section said Friday evening that the Defense Ministry would soon start monitoring PFOS and PFOA levels in the Uchidomari River, into which base stormwater drains. Quote, we cannot say we are relieved because there are other places around Futima where high amounts of PFOS and PFOA were detected. We will keep asking marine officials to allow us into the base to investigate the other locations where the high amount has been detected. So, yeah, based on your track record of, like, monitoring and disclosure, if you're associated with the DOD, sorry, not buying it. Not buying it. From the Wall Street Journal, a couple more headlines. U.S. tech stock extend the sell-off. Right? So the stock market just hit 29,000 and poof, tech sell-off. Right? Interesting about what businesses have thrived during this pandemic, right? Most businesses were unprepared for COVID-19. Domino's delivered. Yeah, if you're in the home fitness business, if you're in the food delivery business, last year Domino's Pizza Incorporated began testing a new service aimed at time-pressed customers, a way to pick up a pizza without entering the store. Upon arrival, you check in via the Domino's app on your phone or text message, and an employee deposits the pie in the trunk of your car. You never make contact. When the pandemic hit and suddenly customers either couldn't or wouldn't enter stores, Domino's quickly rolled out carside pickup at its stores. It is one of the reasons why the pizza delivery giant thrived during the pandemic. Its sales and stock price surged while other restaurants struggled. So it's kind of interesting to see what, you know, how people were uniquely positioned to take advantage of the circumstances that surround the COVID-19 event. Here's another one. COVID-19 vaccine race turns deep freezers into hot commodities. So deep freezers, I'm sure, had a certain demand for them around the country. Blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden this happens and you can't find one. You can't buy them as labs buy them up. Interesting. So that in the news from there's a story about the USS Fitzgerald that I want to get to. So I thought I printed that out. Evidently not. The Navy's going to resume its physical fitness assessments in January. So all you Navy types, be warned. Marine Corps, no announcement made because, you know, being able to run, do pull-ups, right, and whatever, you know, sit-up crunch thing, that was too difficult for the Marine Corps to. But we'll fight the Chinese, no problem. Can't solve the PFT, but please. Please, please. So, no announcement for the Marine Corps. National Transportation Safety Board, unexplained course change was a critical error in the fatal USS Fitzgerald collision. So, the USS Fitzgerald, right? The McCain is down in the Moluccan Straits. The Fitzgerald is out of port its first night. It's crossing an international shipping lane. Its officer of the deck is not talking to the officer in the combat information center. They're not communicating. They have degraded radar systems, evidently, and they haven't doubled the exterior watch on the ship, and they're hauling ass at 22 knots through this shipping lane. Yeah. I won't even talk about the gender of everybody involved because it's predominantly female. The captain of the ship used to be the XO. It's his first night in charge at sea. Do you think here the XO were on the bridge when they crossed the shipping lane? No, fuck no. So the shit show that is the United States Navy, yeah, in full display. But largely the nation's asleep because this social experiment that is the United States Navy that's been going on, this failed social experiment, because at the root of the Navy's mission is not, right, social engineering, it's war fighting. What? Wait a minute. Who decided that? Who decided that? So anyhow, so here's the National Transportation Safety Board. Federal investigators highlighted an unexplained course change by a U.S. guided missile destroyer as a critical error that put the warship in the path of a container ship in the fatal 2017 collision that would kill seven sailors. 8 minutes before the collision with the merchant ship ACX Crystal in a busy shipping lane off the coast of Japan, USS Fitzgerald, traveling at 20 knots, not 22, adjusted its course 10 degrees, setting the stage for the collision, according to the National Transportation Safety Board. This course change proved to be a critical error, and investigators were unable to determine the reason for it. What do you mean unable? How does a ship not, when somebody says come to course, blah, 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 what do you mean we were unable to determine the error for it? Like, you just changed the course for the fuck of it? The study found that the Fitzgerald had not made the course change from 190 to 200 degrees. Oh. That if the Fitzgerald had not made the course change from 190 to 200 degrees 8 minutes before the collision, the destroyer would have passed ahead of the ACX Crystal with a closest point of approach of 1,000 yards or about a half a nautical mile. Therefore, the NTSB concludes that the Fitzgerald unexplained small course change to starboard before the collision put the vessel on a collision course with the ACX Crystal. The course change was entered into the ship's log, but investigations were unable to find a reason for the adjustment. The reevaluation of the course change was one of the few pieces of information contained in the first independent assessment, which was released today, almost 3 years after the Navy's own probe. The independent assessment of the collision places most of the blame on the failings of the watch team on the bridge of the Fitzgerald. The bridge team had failed to move out of the way of the container ship that had the right of way according to the maritime rules of the road. The NTSB, again, a container ship at night. Like, are you kidding me? I mean, it's like a skyscraper floating in the ocean. The NTSB determines the probable cause of the collision between Fitzgerald and ACX Crystal was the Fitzgerald's bridge team's failure to take early and substantial action to avoid collision as the giveaway vessel in the crossing situation, meaning that the other ship had the right of way. Contributing was ineffective communication and cooperation among the Fitzgerald crew on the bridge and in the combat information center, and the Fitzgerald commanding officer's insufficient planning for the hazards of the vessel's intended transit. But again, when you're on the bridge, it's in front of you. Okay? So they show the ACX Crystal, which is essentially eastbound. And it looks like the course of the Fitzgerald is south. They're moving southwest. And so if you, so yeah. So put the Fitzgerald, put your right hand like at 12 o'clock. And now that's going towards 7 o'clock. Okay. So put, you know, your hand. And that's the Fitzgerald. It's at 12 o'clock. It's heading towards 7 o'clock. Okay? Now, put your left hand, right? This is the ACX Crystal. Put it at about 7 o'clock, and it just is driving in a straight line. Okay. Now, as you're going to miss it. You're gonna be aft of it if you continue on your current course. But you now turn from 7 o'clock to like 6:30, and that causes a collision. And that's what the map says. The report faults the Navy's ineffective oversight of the Fitzgerald in areas of operation scheduling, crew training, and fatigue mitigation. Bullshit, man. First night out at sea. It's shit leadership. Somebody should say that. Fatigue, your first night out at sea? How many people do you need on a fucking bridge to say, we're going to hit that son of a bitch? And you can see it coming miles away. You can see it coming. What the fuck were they doing that night? They're sitting there and they're watching this thing. Supposedly, what happens is, if I recall from the other investigation of the Fitzgerald, is the officer of the deck, all of a sudden, they have their heads up their asses. They don't know the ACX crystal is there. And the people down in CIC, they're not even paying attention. That's the kind of fucking shit show this the Navy has become. Supposedly, when they see the ACX crystal, she goes out on the little bridge wing on the right-hand side of the ship. Okay, that would be the starboard side for you squid types. Okay, so she runs out there and she said, and you know what she says? I'm so fucking screwed. That's what she said. Fuck. The Fitzgerald's aggressive schedule leaving port to comply with certification requirements and to return to its deployment schedule provided little rest on the day before the accident. The schedule for the Fitzgerald was developed with the assistance and input of the ship's shoreside command, and this type of schedule appeared to be the norm for the area of Navy operation. Unbelievable. Honestly, it's unbelievable. I could not even imagine, right? I could not even imagine being the parent of somebody that was killed. This shit show. And so you have, you know, junior officers, and so nobody that's senior is on the bridge while you're crossing a heavy shipping lane your first night out at sea, the first night under your command. Neither you nor the XO. I mean, it's a shit show. It's an absolute shit show. NTSB identified 7 safety issues. Fitzgerald's crew, insufficient training. How can multiple people be standing on the bridge and drive a ship into another ship? The thing's just, like I said, it's a fucking skyscraper. Okay? Fitzgerald crew's fatigue. I say bullshit. U.S. Navy practice of not broadcasting automatic identification signals. Well, peacetime transiting, you know, transiting busy shipping lanes, maybe the Navy now has to consider that because they're not competent enough to drive a ship that's not, quote-unquote, squawking through the night without killing somebody. Next, failure of the Fitzgerald and the Crystal to follow the conventional and international regulations for preventing sea collisions. Fitzgerald commanding officer not augmenting bridge watchstanding personnel with a more experienced officer while the vessel was crossing a busy coastal traffic route. I mean, fucking hello. Right? Fucking hello. This is like on a Marine shooting range. You know, rifles were not pointed downrange. Like, no shit, man. It's called a sea and anchor detail on most ships. Right? And what is it? Who are those people? Those are the pros from Dover's. The novices drive it through the middle of the sea when there's nobody around, right? That's when the novices learn. When it gets busy, the pros from Dover show up, and they're there for the crossing, and then they fucking leave, and then the new people show up, and they drive it straight. That's how it works. Next one. Fitzgerald commanding officer not adequately assessing the hazard presented by the vessel's intended transit. That's bullshit, too. He not adequately assessing, oh, what is it going to be, a surprise that in a heavy shipping lane that there's a lot of ships? None of these people were court-martialed. None. insufficient oversight and directive by the U.S. Navy. The report also said the crew of the Crystal could have done more to indicate to the Fitzgerald they were in danger by radioing and signaling the warship's crew. The NTSB report comes more than 3 years after the collision on June 17, 2019, and 2.5 years after a Navy investigation placed the blame on the crew and the commander of the Japan Pace guided missile destroyer. Quote, the collision resulted from a compilation of failures by leadership and watch standards to plan for safety, appropriately adhere to sound navigation practices, execute basic fucking basic watch standing principles, right? That means when you're on watch, you actually pay attention to what the fuck you're supposed to be doing, properly use navigation tools, and deliberately and effectively respond when in extremis. Both the Navy and the NTSB investigations broadly outline the failure of the bridge crew to keep awareness of the ships around them. Quote, the bridge team and CIC did not function effectively as a team, and the OOD on watch displayed a lack of familiarity in the application of the rules of the road and did not follow the CO standing orders, which were, when you get within 2,000 meters of a ship, wake them up. Repeatedly ignore that. Although the CO had a responsibility to ensure that watch standards were properly trained and qualified, the Navy's training organization and the CO's superiors were required to assess and certify that the operating procedures and the watch standard qualification system were effective. Both the bridge team and the watch standards in the ship's combat information center were not completely aware of the traffic around the ship. The OOD told investigators that she saw the ACX Crystal's superstructure about a minute before the collision, and she realized that Fitzgerald was not going to clear the container ship. A minute before. Anyway. It's amazing. Honestly. You're United States Navy. Good fucking luck, boys and girls. Because let me tell you what happens if you go in harm's way and your shit's fucked up. That means people are going to die. So, again, it's a horrible story. And now we have somebody starting the fire on the Bonhomme Richard and then the Bonhomme Richard burning for 4 days in port. It's amazing. I don't even know what to say. The Navy. Yeah. Confronting the Chinese. Good luck. You'll need it. Corps ditching the pro cons for a new junior. And you know what? I mean, I hope people that serve in the Navy, if any of them listen to this, I hope they're insulted. I hope they go to work pissed off. I hope they demand more of the people they work for. Because when you have to go play You Bet Your Life, you got to live with it forever. And if you're incompetent and you overlooked it, that's on you. Nobody can lift that burden from you. All right. Elsewhere, the Marine Corps is ditching its pro-cons for new junior Marine evaluation system. In February, this coming, the Marine Corps will be ditching the current proficiency and conduct marks used to promote junior Marines and replacing with the more objective junior enlisted performance evaluation system. According to an AMAR admin that was released on Wednesday, the JEPES, J-E-P-E-S, system will consist of four equally weighted parts. The first three parts, entitled Warfighting, Physical Toughness, and Mental Agility, are based solely on the ranks of a Marine's rifle score, Marine Corps martial arts program, and physical fitness test. Combat fitness test and primary military education. The score will simply show what percentile that Marine scores in compared to peers in the same military occupational specialty. The final component, called command input, will be a subjective score put together by a Marine's chain of command, evaluating them on individual character, MOS skill, mission accomplishment, leadership, according to the MAR admin. The command input score will be on a 0 to 5 scale, with a Marine who meets expectations expected to be marked between 2 and 3, according to coordinating to a Marine score between 4 and 5 in the PROCON system. Representatives of Marine Corps Manpower and Reserve Affairs did not immediately return phone call. So that's a big deal with the Marine Corps. So still, if everybody's close, the defining event will be subjective, as it should be. Right? How is this Marine performing? How is he or she performing? Top five stories in early bird. Number one, nearly half of troops polled support changing names of bases honoring Confederate generals. There's a shocker. Jesus, nobody expected that. Number two, same poll. Troops, white nationalism, a national security threat equal to ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Number three, U.S. troops, this is from Military Times poll. Those top two were. Number three, U.S. troops to start extended exercises in Lithuania amid tensions over Belarusia. U.S. troops and tanks will arrive in Lithuania on Friday. This is pretty amazing shit when you think about it. I mean, think about that. Lithuania, for God's sakes. That's Soviet Union. Right? Poland, former, you know, Warsaw Pact, Soviet Union. So anyway, number four, report Trump disparaged U.S. war debt as losers and suckers. So that's a story that ran in The Atlantic and then has been picked up. This story is from the Associated Press that had picked up on the story. We already talked about that. A second U.S. Army reservist in Florida dies of COVID. Now, my understanding is still only one active duty service member has died. Marines say Palau mission, proves deployments are possible without bringing coronavirus along for the ride. So congratulations to everybody who did that. Now, next story. Defying peace deal, freed Taliban fighters return to the battlefield. A new confidential report concludes that the majority of fighters are resuming their jihad to overthrow the U.S.-backed Afghan government. If you didn't think this was going to happen, right? You're stupid. Taliban prisoners released by the Afghan government as part of a deal brokered by the United States aimed at ending almost 20 years of war are returning to the battlefield as commanders and fighters in direct contravention of pledges made by the insurgents to the White House. Confidential research obtained by Foreign Policy shows the majority of Taliban prisoners released under an agreement signed by insurgent leaders and the United States were taking up arms to fight Afghan forces and continue their jihad to overthrow the U.S.-backed Afghan government. Blah, 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 blah. So, got that going. Nobody thought that would happen. Next story, which is interesting. Efforts ramp up to get Taliban-Afghan peace talk started. So this is like any deal we'll do to get our asses out of there. And then Afghanistan will be what Afghanistan will be. Another story that's amazing. Allies and former U.S. officials fear Trump could seek NATO exit in a second term. You know, this is like people speculating, you know, and it's just, to me, it's mind-blowing sometimes. Okay, now, I want to go to an email, okay, as we do all personality radio here. I want to go to an email, and the email was about the shitty audio that I did on Monday, but talked about this concept of excited delirium, I think is what it's known as. Mac, not sure if you saw it, but the story about the guy in Rochester that clearly had mental issues and they were substantial, dying in police custody, had the term And I think, and he's using it too. Excited delirium in it. I heard you use it in that crappy audio that you posted on Monday. That got worse in the second hour. Yeah, I apologize for that. I should probably take it down, but I'm not going to. Goes on. I'd never heard this term either. And a lot like you, I'm not going to judge the police officers. They're clearly in a difficult situation dealing with somebody who's lost their mind. Does this person have AIDS? This person is spitting at them. What do they do? Stuff a sock in their mouth? Putting a mesh hood as a precaution so that they don't get spit on? Is that what they were doing? And I also learned from the Floyd video, and after reading about this stuff and listening to you, that when you look at the pressure placed on the back of somebody's head, does that necessarily lead to asphyxiation, or is that caused by something going on chemically inside of their body? I will be interested to learn more. Yeah, the thing on Monday that didn't turn out very well was I had read some stuff written, I think, on a website called The Law Officer. If you go to the podcast page, and which I will do right now, if you go to the podcast page, you will see the links to the website. And so somebody pointed it out to me after there's a story about a week ago today, the police officer in that video, the George Floyd thing. That guy filed a motion to dismiss based on the autopsy. And so the article is entitled The Acquittal of Derek Chauvin. Chauvin, I don't know how you say his name. And it talks about pieces of evidence. It talks about pieces of evidence that are just parts of the fact that will ultimately be introduced, and why you're not going to see any of these police officers convicted of murder. And I'll read these to you. The omission and facts are detailed below, and frankly, we give Medium, which is a website somebody published this on, credit for actually reporting it. They will soon join Law Officer as a racist news outlet for telling the truth. Number one, George Floyd was experiencing cardiopulmonary and psychological distress minutes before he was placed on the ground and well before he had a knee on his neck. The Minneapolis Police Department allowed the use of neck restraint on suspects who actively resisted arrest, and George Floyd actively resisted arrest on two occasions, including immediately prior to the neck restraint being used. Okay. So these are just data points. Okay. So that was an approved Minneapolis Police Department technique when a suspect actively resisted arrest. The officers were recorded on their body cameras recognizing George Floyd as suffering from, quote, excited delirium, a condition which the department considers an extreme threat to both the officer and the suspect. Now, this was really interesting. And again, it has implications for the video that is pretty terrible that you see out of Rochester, I think. A white paper used by the department acknowledges that excited delirium suspects may die regardless of the force involved, and there are only a few options for officers to help prolong the suspect's condition, including restraining the suspect and a call from paramedics. That's exactly what they were doing. Number four, restraining the suspect on his or her abdomen prone position is a common tactic in excited delirium situations, and the white paper used by the agency instructs the officers to control the suspect until paramedics arrived. That is exactly what the officers were doing. Number five, Floyd's autopsy revealed a potential lethal concoction of drugs, not just a potential lethal overdose of fentanyl, but also methamphetamine. together with his history of drug abuse and two serious heart conditions, Floyd's condition was exceptionally and unusually fragile. While the medical examiner added that the restraint played a role in his death, this will be a huge stretch for a proof beyond reasonable doubt, considering that the officers were following department protocol. Number six, Chauvin's neck restraint was highly unlikely to have exerted a dangerous amount of force on Floyd's neck. Floyd is shown on video able to lift his head and neck, and a robust study on double knee restraints shows a median force exertion of approximately 105 pounds. The autopsy showed no strangulation and no asphyxiation. And there have been a string of rednecks showing the tactic on each other in recent weeks. While the video looks awful, it is likely that the officers were doing all they could, fearing the 6'6" Floyd would begin fighting again, guaranteeing his death of excited delirium. So I read that stuff. So excited delirium. What is it? I never heard the term. Now I've heard it twice in a week. Excited delirium, also known as excited or agitated delirium, is a controversial syndrome described as a combination of psychomotor agitation, delirium, and sweating. It may include attempts at violence, unexpected strength, and very high body temperature. Complications may include a couple of different things. Question, what causes death in excited delirium? Molecular studies of the brain of autopsied victims who died in states of excited delirium reveal a loss of dopamine transporter function as a possible trigger of a lethal cascade of neural activities that progress to asphyxia and sudden cardiac arrest. Whoa. Here's another one about excited delirium. Excited or agitated delirium is characterized, now this is from the website, the U.S. National Library of Medicine, is characterized by agitation, aggression, acute distress, and sudden death, often in the pre-hospital care setting. It is typically associated with the use of drugs that alter dopamine processing, hyperthermia, and most notably sometimes with death of the affected person in custody of law enforcement. Subjects typically die from cardiopulmonary arrest, although the cause is debated. Unfortunately, an adequate treatment plan has yet to be established, in part due to the fact that most patients die before hospital arrival. While there is still much to be discovered about the pathology and treatment, it is hoped that this extensive review will provide both police and medical personnel with the information necessary to recognize and respond appropriately to excited delirium. Yeah, so I'm with that, the emailer. I hadn't seen this ever, and now in the space of a week, I see it twice. So, but yeah, that's that website and talking about those issues. All right, I want to do today in history. Yeah, I haven't done today in history in a long time. And honestly, I mean, I like today in history. I'm like a history guy. And so you're going to see kind of a link between history today and some of the stuff that you constantly hear on this program, and that is James Stockdale. So here's today in history.